Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you. Hey, listeners. I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp, this all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more. I'm gonna raise a fuss, I'm gonna raise a holler.
Trying to make a dollar. Every time I call my baby, trying to get a date, my boss says,
you gotta work late. Hey everybody, it's the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is RJ. We are here with our friend Diana. Hi, Diana.
Hi, RJ.
Welcome. We're going to talk about Sunday Night Dicks and then sort of the whole weekend, but I did want to say, if people want to hear about the second night of Dicks or check out the conversation that Tom and I had about his experience at Dicks, where we talk a little bit about some songs and some other cool stuff, check out the link in the show notes. I'm going to link to the video that we did. But Diana, I'm interested to get your take. I know that per your Twitter comments, you do not like podcasts, so thank you for coming on to our podcast, even though you will not listen to it.
they're just not my thing.
So glad you're on.
Everyone who does them, I just don't. Maybe I don't have the attention span for them. There's, you know, since I joined this whole fish scene late to the game in 2010, I have so many fish shows to catch up on that all of you old folks have seen. So really, that's what I spend my time doing. I don't have time to listen to people talk about them. I have to hear them first, you know.
I understand. Well, I appreciate you talking with us. So, yeah, let's talk about the post curveball thing in terms of the expectations and the anticipation and all that. It seemed like that was pretty prominent going into the weekend, right?
Yeah, for sure. I, for one, was trying not to have any expectations and trying not to get my hopes up. Because, you know, expectations can kind of just lead to resentment if they don't do what you wanted them to do or what you thought they were going to do. Additionally, a thing that a lot of people maybe haven't really been thinking of and considering is that, like, they were probably in a pretty bad place after curveball got canceled as well. They weren't the ones who made the decision. So, you know, kind of taking it easy on them and letting them do what they do, show up to Dick's and play three shows for us, really was all that they owed people, and that's exactly what they did. For me, I thought that they might address it, and was a little surprised that they didn't say anything. I feel like at the end of the Dick's run, on a couple of occasions, Trey has, you know, said at least, you know, thank you for a great summer, thanks mm-hmm. to the crew and all that. So I was a little surprised at the end of Sunday night when he didn't say anything. It's possible he just couldn't. I know if I was them, I might get pretty emotional trying to discuss it after a year plus of planning went down the tubes in an instant. So maybe he just couldn't. It did seem after he said thank you so much that something else was coming, but maybe he just couldn't get it out.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. It would have been much more abnormal to do it like at the beginning of the show on Friday, but I was almost thinking that, like,
right.
You know, that's what I was thinking. Like, I wonder if they like come out and say like, "Hey, we're glad to be back playing again." You know what I mean, or whatever. But yeah, that's, you know,
right.
not their style. What did you think about Sunday's show, I guess, overall, before we get into specifics, in terms of, you know, your own impressions and expectations, maybe, before we talk about the specific songs and all that?
I thought that it was great. I think my favorite show of the run actually was Friday night, just because I feel like in lieu of coming out and saying what they did, they kind of said it with the music. I feel like there was a huge tension release. They just kind of showed up and played their hearts out. I think Friday there really was not a ton of wasted moments throughout the whole show. The encore was really nothing special, but Harry Hood's my favorite Fish song, and coming in the second spot being possibly one of the better Hoods I've ever seen live was mm-hmm. like, you know, a pretty great start to the show after a solid free of What's the Use, you know, epic. It was just, I couldn't really have asked for more from Friday night. Saturday also very solid. Been chasing Sally all summer, so for it to finally show up right towards the end of the set and then lead into Flav after a super funky 2001, that was mm-hmm. that was solid. Chalk Dust Twist, Piper, Everything's Right, Jin, Down With Disease, I can't forget about that. And then Sunday, Soul Planet is still kind of growing on me as a song.
All right.
I respect the jam. I think it's a pretty silly song otherwise. I kind of knew that it was coming, so I let it happen.
Yeah.
And I guess probably Sunday may have been, in terms of song selection, maybe my least favorite in the first set, but there were still definite highlights. And then the second set was pretty solid, in my opinion. So, yeah.
Cool. And no, that's good. The Soul Planet, everyone knew that was coming. I think, like you said, there was a soul. There was a soul theme. You got it, and we knew both the Set Your Soul Free and the Soul Planet were coming eventually. I think the Friday night show, like you said, is sort of everyone's standout. But many people have told me that it's the best show of the year by far. So you know, if you believe what you hear from Fish Fans, maybe that's what it is. But you know, as you know, it's all about whatever you think. So I'm curious about Sunday night. The first set seemed like it was sort of like the first sets Friday and Saturday had like each had one or two really cool big sort of, you know, moments or pieces of improv, and Sunday didn't really. I guess Soul Planet probably was the longest, maybe or Antelope at the end, but it was just sort of a standard first set. But did it feel pretty high energy and all that, or did it feel like it was like you were waiting for something to happen that didn't? I'm just curious about your perspective on being there.
Yeah, I think we kind of got a little spoiled. Actually, all summer I've felt this way, that many of the first sets were almost more akin to second sets than mm-hmm. they were to your average first sets of 3.0, and we got kind of spoiled in that sense. I think I'd say out of the three nights, this Sunday was the first steadiest first set of them. I there weren't any real, like, the disease jam or, you know, hood, what's like basically the whole first set from Friday. None of that really on Sunday. There were some cool segues. The energy was definitely high. And actually a personal highlight of the whole run for me was the Mellow Mood Bust Out. That was the first time I'd ever heard that song. I'd kind of put it out of my mind that I'd ever hear it, which was a bummer because I love that song and I think it's so absolutely beautiful. So that was a huge highlight for me, even though it's not that big of a deal for most people, I don't think.
Well, I think it's notable. I mean, it's only the 10th time it's been played. They started playing it in 2000 and played it a handful of times in 2000 and then 2003 and then like twice in 2010, twice in 2011. And it hasn't been played since Tahoe 2011. So, you know, I think that's a pretty big bust out, like you said, and probably was pretty cool for people who had been, who had been either, you know, chasing it or paying attention to that. Right.
Right. I thought Maze was pretty solid. Miss You always cuts deep, so I could have done without that. But I understand why people like that song. But Antelope was a really solid set closer. I thought they built a lot of tension there. It was really well played. And then the second set, I know there's been a lot of complaining and yammering on about the slowed down Golden Age, which is pretty confusing to me because when Trish played Slow Llama, people were all about that. But, you know, you take it down a couple beats to a funkier pace, and people are all complaining. So
yeah, well,
whatever.
People are going
to complain. Find anything to complain about.
Yeah, no, that was. I thought that. I mean, the jam in there was really cool. The 46 Days, Tweezer, Golden Age, Steam, all of it really was really entertaining. I thought.
I thought the segues were awesome.
So. Yeah, I was just gonna say, according to the Fishnet set list, at least there's no breaks in the whole set. Everything was a segue, which is always cool, and seems to have happened a lot this run. There was a lot of not stopping. I was watching Sunday night with a friend who's not a Fish fan on Monday morning at his house, and he was like, did they ever like just stop for a second and like talk or do anything? It's like, sometimes they do, but sometimes they just like keep playing, you know?
Yeah.
And the tweezer was really good too. Not a lot to complain about in a second set, right? I mean, there's a lot of good improv and a lot of segues and all that. I think people were unhappy with the Gotajibu placement, but if I had been there, I would have really liked that, because I just think that's a fun song to groove to.
I did not see that complaint online, which is, I find, to be absolutely ridiculous, because I love that song and I'll take that at every show wherever they want to put it. So, yes, yeah. I guess people will find anything to complain about.
Yeah. But overall, I mean, in terms of the overall run, and then maybe your what's your take on sort of how this summer, I mean, take the curveball thing out of it, but how do you think this summer sort of panned out? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought the run was a great way to end the year. I know some people were expecting fireworks and all crazy over the top stuff from Phish because of the curveball cancellation, and because so many people had put all their eggs in one basket for curveball and maybe, you know, hurried up and spent a lot of money and changed plans and to come to Dick's. But, you know, like I said before, it's possible they're still kind of recovering from it too. And they're just humans like us. So I think that in terms of showing up musically and bringing everything they could to the table, I really couldn't have asked for more. I would have been very happy with just like if Friday night was the big night of the run and the other two were just kind of mediocre, I would have still thought it was a pretty worthwhile weekend. But I thought that both Saturday and Sunday brought highlights that I'll go back and listen to. I was pleased. And I did actually get to do a lot of this tour. We were in MPP. We celebrated my 150th on the second night, which I thought was one of the better shows of the run as well. We were at Camden. We were in Alpharetta. We did the Gorge. So I saw a lot of Phish this summer. And I think that they definitely were just gaining steam throughout the year. I thought the Alpharetta run was one of the best of the summer. Probably Alpharetta 1 is up there with my favorites. I really liked MPP 2. I know people are ranking that a little lower than
I thought it was awesome. That was a really fun time.
Yeah. Fun song selection, well played, kind of just like silly fishness everywhere. But then, Dick's Night 1 I'd put up there with best shows of the summer. So
cool.
I think, like I said, you know, they didn't bring the big disco ball and put it in the middle of the field, but in terms of doing what they could do as a band, I think that they brought what they could. They played well and, they showed up.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad you got to see so many shows. It was that's a lot of good shows. The overall, it seems like going into, I mean, the fact that we have a fall tour coming up in a month is pretty sweet.
It is pretty sweet. I have a couple of shows planned for that as well. The Albany shows, the second one is my 30th birthday, which I'm really excited about. We're going down to Hampton and we'll be in Vegas as well. So, cool. You know, as shitty as it is that that curveball was canceled, it's not the end of the world. You know, people are comparing it to Coventry, mm-hmm, but it's kind of like, well, there's still a band. Like, no one is addicted to drugs and falling down a rabbit hole into a pit of possible death at the end of it. You know, like, it sucks. Like, it sucks that everyone planned, everyone flew places, everyone spent all this money, and some people didn't get to see any Phish this summer, but they're, you know, it's not the end of the world. There is fall. There is hopefully going to be New Year's, and you know, fingers crossed, I would really, really love if they could set the festival again for next year, because if they don't, it'll be 5 years between festivals, and that would be a bummer if they do it in 2020. I'm just gonna keep my fingers crossed, try not to have expectations for it, but I feel for the folks that don't get to do as many shows as maybe I or other people can, and have friends I haven't seen in a couple of years because of family and job commitments and living all over the country. So it's all just about seeing each other and getting a chance to do what we do. But one of the things that we were lucky enough to kind of figure out was because we had a big group of RVs and people coming from everywhere. So there was really no turning back for us. We were all there. The RVs were rented. The food was bought. You know, it was kind of like, well, we're here. Why not just spend the weekend together? So we ended up going to a campground in upstate New York and just spending the weekend together. And we realized, like, even if Fish isn't playing, we still are going to have a good time together. We still can come together and have fun and enjoy each other's company. So that was kind of a silver lining on all that. And it kind of made me and the rest of us realize that, like, once Fish isn't around anymore, like, we'll still be able to do this.
Right.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on and sharing your perspective on both, you know, Sunday night, but also the run. Like you said about Friday night, I love Hood's one of my favorites too. And the coming second in the run, that's a good way to start. So that's pretty cool. And you got, saw a bunch of good shows. So I'm glad you had fun and thanks for coming on and, recapping it with us.
Thanks for having me, RJ.
All right, we'll talk to you
soon.
Can't
wait to listen.
I'll see you in Hampton.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil Story Made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Love, sweet love, darling. Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast.